Listen in to the Community Connection Show with Alan Collier every Wednesday from midday to 2pm, where local community groups let you know what's happening right here on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley.
You're listening to People Powered Radio, proudly supported by the Community Broadcasting Foundation, cbf.com.au.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley. And being the first Wednesday of the month, we've got our new segment, which we started last month, and we've got with us Peter from Absolute Solutions. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you for having me again, Alan.
Absolute, our pleasure. I will say, if anybody's got a question that they want answered about private detectives and what they do and what they don't do, you can give us a ring on 59615991, 59615991. Greg's out there and he'll bring the question into us, or you can send us an email to info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. That's info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. Peter, we've had a couple of questions and they both interact a little bit, and I think I might have mentioned this to you at when I first, we were here last month, when we started talking about private eyes or private investigators. I guess most of us don't come involved with a lot of them, and so we tend to see what's on TV and we think, as I said, yeah, they get beat up, they get the lovely girl at the end of the day and they drive these big flash cars, which you told me none of that's true, except maybe the women. I don't know. Anyway, we're not going to go there. Peter, the question, there's two questions, but I guess it's very much the same, is how the police view the a private investigator. Because one person said, well, every show they see, the police always hate them and, you know, they don't want anything to do with them. And the other person said, well, you know, on some of these TV shows, and they are TV shows, let's be honest, that's not real life, is that, in fact, the police like the private investigators and, in fact, at times help them with a case. So I guess we're asking, where do you see it in a relationship with the police, or is it just dependent on the police person themselves?
Yeah, I think in real life there's a cross-section of people, police, that probably have a bit of a negative connotation towards private investigators, and then there'd be people in the police force, I presume, that would have a rather positive connotation. And, of course, as we touched on last month, is a fair portion of private investigators are actually former police officers, so they have the perhaps the connections, or they know how to talk the lingo and maybe cut some corners, and maybe more importantly too is to how to present a case back to the police for consideration for prosecution if it's going to head in that direction. So look, my general, as a generalisation, my dealings are, it's just like dealing with any cross-section of society, you get mixed responses. But you look, overall, I think, you know, we've got a job to do. We're licensed to do it. We can be of great assistance to police in gathering evidence and information, for argument's sake, collating things like CCTV footage. So we can actually be quite helpful to police in that respect.
Peter, do you very often build a case? I know a lot of it, you know, it's divorce work and other sorts of stuff, which is all civil, but do you very often sort of work on a case and think, well, the police should be involved here, and then you hand it over and because of the information you've got, they will take it further? Personally, does that happen very often to you?
In the personal sort of husband and wife, marital spouse type relationship ones, very rarely. On occasions, there might be something where there could be an element of perhaps child neglect or even abuse. So on that basis, you'd probably either encourage one side of the argument to pass that along, but it wouldn't necessarily be my role. In respect to the corporate profit protection side of it, absolutely. Information that we can gather and the evidence that we gather, you know, be it CCTV as mentioned, or even our own logs and entries, that can actually be quite helpful for police to prosecute someone of interest, yeah.
Peter, let's just run, get a little bit more specific. Say you're parked out the front of it in a street, doesn't matter where it is, and you've been there for a number of hours because you're waiting to see people come and go, or whatever you've got to do. And so somebody gets a bit panicky and thinks, oh, I'll fix this guy. So they ring the police. Now, when the police come, what would their reaction? Would they be inclined to say, look, move on? Or when you said you're an investigator, are they likely to say, oh, yeah, well, let you just do what you've got to do and we'll go on our way?
Yeah, look, it's one of those issues that people don't realise, and you sometimes have to explain it to them, that sitting out the front of their house is no crime. In fact, it's technically a public place.
Yep.
So there's very little that can be done in some ways. However, if the police do get called, they would, you'd obviously identify yourself, and you'd probably apologise to them that you hadn't already contacted the station to let them know you were there. From my experience, is you probably get a bit of an inkling as to the likelihood of you being called in by a neighbour or someone nearby.
Right.
And I would tend to be proactive, perhaps, and ring the nearest police station, tell them who I am.
Oh, would you?
Yeah, absolutely. Identify my vehicle, explain that, you know, I'm there for purpose, for a genuine purpose. Give them my mobile phone number, and if there's any issues, then they'll get back to me. And what that does is it creates a bit more of a positive rapport with the police, because they don't have to, you know, the divvy van doesn't have to bother detouring out to see who I am. They already know who I am, and it's on record, and perhaps they might calm the people down that are ringing in, saying, look, we know who it is. We know they're there for a reason. There's nothing to see here, kind of thing.
Oh,
so, and if you're going to be, technically, they encourage you, the licensing body encourages you, if you know you're going to be somewhere for a fairly lengthy period of time, that you actually notify the nearest police station of your whereabouts, the general times or days that you're going to be there, and the general location, so, and vehicles. So again, they can either contact you to let you know that, you know, things are getting pretty hot in town, or alternatively, they can put people's mind at ease.
Peter, I don't want to ask you anything about operational, because that's not fair. You've got to. So I want to keep the very, very sort of sparse, because it's, we're not asking you to give away any trade secrets. But we'll say you're in my street. You're keeping an eye on me. I could have done. You might think I'm doing an insurance fraud or whatever. So you've got to be there for 2 or 3 days, because I might come out today and then tomorrow I might go and play golf. But in a case like that, do you just have your one car, or would you swap cars day in, day? And if you don't want to tell me, that's fine. I can understand that.
Look, there's definitely an element of using either different heads, different vehicles, changing your position slightly. But at the end of the day, you probably have to be in a certain location to get what you need to get, or to cover the possibility that something might occur. So I guess the art of it is to perhaps be as far away as possible and still see what you need to see.
Yep.
And there's probably a couple of other little tricks, but you're right, I'd probably prefer to keep them to myself at the moment.
Absolutely. We wouldn't ask you that. We're going to ask you to tell us a bit about a case or something that you've been doing. Welcome back to Community Connections. I must make a correction. I'd written it down wrong. Peter is with Absolute Facts, so not what I said. So anyway, Peter, you're going to tell us a bit about a case or two you've been involved in.
Probably more to do with a bit of a trend that's come up, and it's to do with cybersecurity, which is something that I do touch on from time to time. I must admit I'm not an expert in that particular field, but as part of some recent research and a recent webinar, Alan, it became apparent that 34%, in other words, 1 in 3 of all cybersecurity data breaches were actually resulting from human error, as opposed to, you know, someone getting sort of hacked or ransomware and things like that. I was a little bit surprised at that number.
I'm totally surprised too, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it was an interesting little piece of research. So, and obviously the necessity to, with your password security and general security, and it sort of leaks into my area a bit with people coming and going from employers and companies and businesses, and obviously having access, if not control, of the intellectual property of the business, it can be a real issue of concern.
Because some people just I don't know where I read it yesterday, so where someone's password was 0000. I mean, not going to go well, is it?
Obviously don't use your name or your pet's name or, in fact, one of the pieces of advice was not to use any word or combination of words in the dictionary, because these Trojans or search engines or whatever you want to call them that are working away in the background, they pretty much can run through the dictionary in a reasonably short space of time and hack your password that way.
Fair dinkum.
Yep. Date of birth, year of birth. Obviously, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 isn't really recommended. And the bottom line was short equals convenience, but at what potential cost?
Yeah, yeah. So obviously the shorter it is, the easier it's going to be to hack, isn't it?
Yes, and particularly if it's got a word in it, and particularly if that word happens to be your name.
Peter, you were saying that that's part of your job. Do you do quite a bit of industrial work, do you?
I can do, but it's also, I do get a lot of inquiries in respect to people concerned about what has taken place on a company or perhaps a personal laptop computer. I don't personally do that analysing, but there are experts in the field that can look at the infamous cache and see where people have been surfing on the internet and what sort of inquiries they're putting up and whether they're related to work or perhaps not so much.
Is it true, Peter, that even though you've deleted something off your computer and you think you've got rid of it, that the experts can still go in and find what you've been up to?
Yeah, I think with most things, if it was serious enough, there'd be some Commonwealth perhaps based experts that would be quite able to reconfigure a computer. I think elements of what you see on the television and the movies with the CIS, NCIS and all that sort of stuff, I'm sure they can recreate quite a bit. So to my understanding, in fact, I've got that issue here myself. I've gone through so many computers over 30 years and I've got all the hard drives stored away, and I will eventually have to figure out a way how to actually destroy them to get, to protect my privacy requirements and things like that. So that's whether it's drown them, smash them with a hammer and burn them, I think that's seem to be the best options that I know of at this time. But, yeah, there's definitely risk involved.
Peter, this may be an unfair question. I've been reading a bit about this dark web. Now, I don't want to get involved in the dark web because we don't want to promote it, and it's obviously a lousy spot. But how would you imagine that the police got into these where all the crooks were using? I mean, that seems to be unbelievable they were able to do that.
Yeah, look, it would. Firstly, I'll have to say I have never gone anywhere near the dark web, and it's something that I don't
believe
I have the capabilities to not bring myself to grief. But look, I think the police and the cyber crimes division, who, by the way, are calling out, begging for people to come on board, from my understanding, with sort of any IT or computer nous, they're screaming out for people to try and obviously keep up with the crooks, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But look, presumably they've cleverly ingratiated themselves into the appropriate circles and areas and being able to gather evidence that way. So well done to them. And, with all this new cryptocurrency and related things coming up as well, and issues with the reporting, the financial reporting, and all sorts of issues coming up. So, yeah, it's an ever evolving world.
I don't understand what this encrypting is. Do you? I don't understand that at all.
So encrypting as opposed to cryptocurrency. So yep. Encrypting is obviously a program that turns your data, in other words, you type a sentence and that turns it into gobbledygook. Unless you have the key to the gobbledygook, you can't make it out. And, I mean, at the end of the day, all computer, it's all zeros and ones at the end of the day. So it's just the combination of those. So encryption software is a good thing to protect yourself. But obviously the other trend that's coming very popular is using the VPNs, the virtual private networks, and they're very strongly recommended from a computer security point of view at this time anyway, where you're located.
How does that work, Peter?
Well, it basically puts you at a different location, so it moves you around, and it doesn't tell anyone necessarily where you're actually based at the time and where your information's coming from.
So it's not only crooks that use that. Like, I could use that too, could I?
Yes, I think one of the basic recommendations for general security, particularly on your phone these days, because people do so much on their phone, is to have a VPN, a virtual private network. There's plenty of companies that offer that product. It could be tied in with your own computer software security. They offer that sort of protection as well. And it's pretty much recommended that you go that way.
Because the problem is with phones, people have got their credit cards and all sorts of stuff on them, haven't they?
Yeah. Well, that's another one that apparently, you know, with this PayWave and those sort of similar products, is that people can be nearby with a receiver, and they can actually receive your payment information off your phone if it's coming through Bluetooth or other sources. To be honest, I'm not an expert on this, but,
fascinating. But
obviously there's pitfalls to watch out for.
Peter, you'd like to give some home security tips for us, please.
Involved in is looking at just sort of some general security tips and a general security survey, whether it be a business premises or a residential premises. And one of the things that's probably been the bane of my existence over a number of years is, and probably one of the best inventions, value for money inventions for home security, of course, has been the sensor light. And that has changed a lot of the ability to sneak up driveways and things like that. So sensor lights are definitely a recommended home security and business security prevention for that matter, because there's nothing more uncomfortable than being flooded in light when you're trying to sneak around.
And it's a cheap way to do it too, isn't it?
Yeah, absolute value for money. So that's probably tip number one. And then I came across one recently which was about locking up your home. Even if you only go for a short away for a short time, actually locking up your houses. Apparently, there's a stat saying that many burglars just walk in through an unlocked door or window.
Fair,
and I think you had an anecdote yourself to add on to that one, Alan.
Yeah, I was just saying that I was talking to someone a little while ago, and they were in the house, so they didn't have the door locked up, and they went out in the backyard just to do something, and they were back within a couple of minutes and came in and find the TV and computer gone. So obviously someone rocked up to the door, tried the door or called out, and then no one there, bang, it's gone.
Yeah, and some other good little tips on while we're on that topic is things like putting a bit of dowel in sliding windows, or probably even more importantly, sliding doors. And then looking at, bushes and hedges that people can hide behind, et cetera, et cetera. So you could, I have done in the past and can do, come out and do a fairly basic security survey on either a residence or a factory. And, of course, what people possibly don't realise is one of the main forms of entry in many situations is actually through the roof and through the ceiling. So that's always something else that you've got to pay attention to.
You really should have some way of locking the manhole, shouldn't you? Otherwise, once they're in there, it's just they just pick up the manhole and they're in the house.
Yeah, and one of the other trends, which is a bit of an unfortunate one, is in the domestic violence situation where the ladies remained in the family home, and I can probably speak from experience in this one too. The males tend to know how to get into their own home. If they've lived there for a number of years, there's always something that's loose, or there's a sneaky entry point that they can get in, even if you change locks and things like that. There is a known fact that a male who's lived at a residence for a number of years knows how to get into that residence.
True. Mm. So, Peter, with talk about sort of break-ins, would there be more home break-ins and what there are commercial ones, or would it be the other way around, or is there no stats on that?
I will have some homework for next month, I think, Alan. I actually don't know the answer to that question, and I probably won't offer an opinion because I honestly don't have never really bothered about that, but I am aware there is consistent commercial break-ins just as much as there's consistent residential break-ins, but I'm not sure of the actual stats.
Peter, could you also check, well, you might know offhand, is it true that there are more break-ins on the commercial premises over the weekends, because that way they're not going to be detected till Monday morning, or than any other day of the week, or am I just imagining that?
I suspect you might be right, but I'm not actually aware of the stats in that regard, so that will be more homework again for
just
next month.
I'd just be keen to know. Peter, off here, we were just talking about crime stats. Are the crime stats staying stable during COVID? Have they gone up or gone down?
I think the biggest concern during COVID was that domestic violence would really have an escalation, and I'm not sure whether any figures have actually come out, but I did hear that the call-outs and things along that, and the stress on services that offer, you know, temporary relief and that for usually the female side of it. I did put up a recent post about how many murders in Victoria in 2020, of which there were 396 victims of homicide put up on the stats. But the good news was, in some ways, it was a decrease of 19 victims from 2019. And I did have someone respond to that, saying they were surprised it was that high.
Yeah. Me, so I'm surprised. So that's almost one a day, isn't it?
Yeah, and just clarifying, that's for Victoria, the state of Victoria. Yeah. So, yeah, it is when you look at it from some perspectives, it's a fairly concerning number. And to follow that on, the Victorian crime data, which gets released to the 30th of June 2021, it had 522,000 offences reported. And they're claiming that that's a reduction of 4% year on year, and it equates to only 7,800 for every 100,000 of population that presumably people affected by that. And the last bullet point that came out of that was approximately half of reported offences were property and deception related.
Right. Peter, can we just go back to the you were saying about the murder one, 300 and so many. Does the stats tell us how many of those were male and how many of those were female?
Would you like me to add that to my ever-burgeoning list of homework? I don't have that number.
The only reason I ask, Peter, I'm just wondering, out of those 300 or so, how many were domestic violence as opposed to a punch-up down the pub? Now, I suspect if it's a punch-up down the pub and someone gets killed, then I would think, and I don't know, you're the expert, probably 90% of those would be guys, because they're the ones that go there and get a full as a skint and then start eating, belting each other up. But if it's women, if there's more women, I would have thought that they would be domestic violence more so than just being murdered on the street. Now, I don't know whether I'm right or wrong.
Yeah, look, if I had to have a guess, I suspect it would be a higher female proportion, but I have to qualify by saying that's just an uneducated guess at this stage.
Welcome back to Community Connections, and I'm talking to Peter from Absolute Facts. Peter, you want to talk about, we've all seen this on Facebook, where some of these delivery drivers, they drop the parcels off, and next thing, some goose is following around knocking them off.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually did put a recent post up on my Facebook feed, which is Absolute Facts, F-O-C-T-S, by the way, and it was about, have the porch pirates struck you? And Australia Post at that point had reported over 1 million parcels were stolen last year.
A million.
That's Australia Post. But then I did see something else of interest. I saw a mention about Amazon presumably over in the States. And they're saying that package theft is at an all-time high, at 1.7 million packages stolen or lost every day in the USA.
Every day,
a cost of about 25 million of lost goods and services. And in response to that, they're introducing secure lockers now so that people can collect their packages from secure lockers. And I believe they're available or becoming more available in Australia as well.
Gee, I wouldn't have thought. 1 million packages.
Australia Post, yep.
And that doesn't count what toll and those other people that do deliveries as well, don't they? You know, there's some that don't come via the mail.
Yeah. And if you look at the, and some people probably do this, look at their local Facebook group, whether it's Manningham or the Yarra Valley or things like that, and there are quite often people putting up CCTV clips of, a dubious person helping themselves to a package off the front porch and things like that. So, and it, probably another loose connection with that too is the amount of mail theft as well. That's M-A-I-L, not M-A-L-E, of course.
No one would have pinched him.
Theft of mail, people going, through letterboxes, and also a very, very much on trend at the moment is getting into the downstairs of, unit complexes and helping themselves into the letterboxes there and grabbing whatever they can, be it a credit card or perhaps a driver's licence or even utility bills can be quite helpful these days for identity theft. So,
We are a scabby lot of people at times, aren't there, out there, aren't there?
Yeah, well, we tend to follow trends that perhaps come from overseas, not necessarily, but I don't think Australia is necessarily the leader in a lot of these things, but certainly the trends become apparent and cheats or way around things become apparent and everybody cashes in until something gets done to close it down.
Peter, I guess this is unfair to ask you, but I'm going to ask you anyway, because there may be no stats. Because there have been more people at home because of COVID, has that brought some of these thefts down, or because there's unemployment and that, has it gone up? Would you know that?
Yeah, I have heard that there was a decrease initially, but I think the tyranny of the lockdowns, particularly in Melbourne, I also heard then that the trend came back quite hard the other way and that people had almost nothing better to do than try and get up to no good.
Yeah, and then I guess the unemployment has not everybody got JobKeeper and all that, so I thought maybe that might have created a few problems as well.
Yes, and I did read a recent article about just because someone's got a bright yellow vest on doesn't necessarily mean that they're not a crook.
Yeah, that's a good point too, isn't it?
Because you're driving a van.
Well, you tend to think if you see a person walking up to a porch in a vest, you would tend to think that that person was making a delivery, wouldn't you?
That's right.
Hello, your dog's not happy. Dog's not happy there.
I have to apologise for the dog. It's barking at actually, that could be a good segue into a deterrent is to have a dog, a loud and noisy dog, as a safety deterrent.
Sounds good too. Peter, we've got to go anyway because Greg Carrick is along at 2 o'clock with he's got a show, then I've got to get out of the studio so he can come in. Thank you so much again, Peter. We look forward to seeing you the first Wednesday in December and then it'll be all over for the year.
That's right. Thank you very much for your time again, Alan.
And we've given you a bit of homework, so we look forward to you bringing that back with you next time.
Yes, I've written down my notes. Thank you.
Thanks, Peter, and thanks for your time.
Bye-bye.